Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Love of Books podcast featuring indie and small press authors with host author Emma Polova. I would like to thank our major sponsors, Doc Chavent and author Jennifer Rains. Today, I will be chatting with Australian author Jennifer Rains, who will announce the details of her book giveaway of Masquerade at the end of the interview. Australian Jennifer Rains writes sensuous contemporary romances set mainly but not exclusively in Australia. Think Malta, Finland, New Zealand, or who knows, right? A dreamer and an optimist. Her stories are a delicious cocktail of passion, mutual respect, and loyalty, because she still believes in happily ever after. So do I. Hello, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks, Emma. How are you?
I am good. Now tell us, how hot is it in Australia? And what day and time is it?
Oh, it's 10 o'clock on Friday morning, whereas it's Thursday evening for you. We are at the end of summer, and it's been a very hot summer, very sticky humidity, and very uncomfortable often. Yeah.
Okay. And do you change time down and under,
We
or
do.
you don't? You do. Okay.
We do have daylight saving time. So we are currently on daylight saving time, and that will end early in April.
I think we're changing this weekend, I think.
Okay.
All right. So give us a brief summary of Masquerade.
Okay. In Masquerade, Liam Quinn, a lawyer, and Kate Turner, a researcher who writes romance in her spare time, find themselves paired on a confidential project. Their identical twins have also been working on a project, a billboard campaign, which is about to go live, potentially jeopardising Liam and Kate's anonymity. We've got a bit of deception, a bit of betrayal in their pasts, a masquerade, a road trip, a steamy attraction, and Kate and Liam discover the steps they took to protect their hearts might break them.
Awesome. What are they like? How would you describe your main protagonists, Kate and Liam?
She lacks confidence in her romance writing. She's good at her job. She feels completely confident in her job as a researcher, but has been belittled during her life by family and an ex-boyfriend about her romance writing. So she keeps it a secret, which is part of her deception. Liam is also keeping secrets, but his concern, his dead father. His father died suddenly, leaving behind debts, and Liam discovered that he was swindled. And he's kept that a secret from his identical twin brother because he wanted his brother to follow his dream, which was to be a bespoke furniture maker.
Hey.
So I guess they're good, honest, strong people.
Nice. Good, honest, strong. We like those, right? We would like to be like them. Tell us all about the process of writing Masquerade, from the initial idea to the books, to the book on the shelves of your local bookstore or on Amazon. How did it all come about? What would you compare this journey to? Was it like a roller coaster? Or a recent author told me it was more like climbing Mount Everest with a heavy backpack.
Yes, I have actually described this particular book as giving birth to an elephant. It really it was the longest kind of gestation period, and I thought sometimes it would never happen, but I couldn't let it go. So I've written a number of standalone. I always used to write standalone contemporary romances. So I had written a number of standalone contemporary romances. But everyone was whispering in my ear that series are all the go, and that readers become invested in your characters and want to check in on previous characters. And it's a way to actually build readership, and I do want people to read my books. So I thought I want to see if I can do it. Can I actually write a series? And I talked to a few people, and they said, you know, you might have a different thread in different series. So you might do family members. There seems to be a big rush at the moment on sports teams. Like you might do everyone in a hockey team or something like that, which is actually not my bent. I decided to choose choosing family. That's the subtext, that you're born with certain people. They might not always support you. Things might happen, but we can choose our family. We can choose the people we love and we want to have in our lives. And I thought that would work sort of for standalone books, but also as a thread through a series. So I thought, okay, I'll start with identical twins. That gives me two leads to start with. That's good for a series. And I decided to add another set. So now I had four characters and potentially three books. The big struggle was this book, where I wanted to introduce all four characters to start with and some of the backstory. And a number of beta readers were telling me it was sort of too complicated, and they weren't sure what I was trying to get at. And so I abandoned it. And I started to write book two. And I actually had some competition success with that. And there were a few nibbles of interest. And I thought, well, holy moly, I've got to get book one done. And I thought, can I pretend it doesn't exist? Can I change things? And then I thought, no, I really want to write that book. I really want it to get through. So I changed, I guess, over the course of this, my way of writing. And that was how I ended up getting it. And I'm with Inkspell Publishing, a small publisher. And Inkspell had picked up a couple of my standalones. So Melissa Kerr was open to this book and this series. So that was how I got it to publication.
How did you manage to change your style of writing? You have to enlighten us.
I think that when I started writing, for some reason, I almost seemed to think you had to start at the beginning and work your way through. You know, you go from the beginning to the end. And I've learned two big lessons. One is that you write the beginning when you're finished, because you actually, well, you revise the beginning when you're finished, because you've learned a lot more about your characters by then. Enough to go back and to do things about perhaps the tone in those opening pages. So, was character A really angry at that moment or puzzled? Was character B embarrassed or ashamed? And those kind of nuances really help refine the book. The other major change in my writing, probably, was that I started writing snippets of dialogue. So I started imagining my characters talking to each other or talking to other people in situations. And I would put those down and I would slot them into order as they developed and various interactions occurred. And then I would add narrative to build the story. And then I've learned that for me, when I think I've got a reasonable draft, I need to put it aside. So I put it aside for a minimum of about 6 weeks. When I go back, I find I have much more clarity about what's happened, how it works. I might change the point of view in a scene. I might abandon a scene. I'm not so holding tight to the book. I can see it a little more objectively, I guess, and be both editor and author. So, I think they're the big changes that I've learned, and I'm more comfortable with setting it aside, knowing it's not finished, but setting it aside and thinking I can do this, but I'll let it sit.
Let it sit for a bit. Let it cook. So, what inspired it? anything, any specific moment that offset this whole, it's going to be an entire series, right?
Yes. It's there are a number of books. I think sometimes I find I'm watching TV or listening to the news and something snags on my imagination. And in this instance, it was a lengthy television documentary sort of thing that looked at identical twins. And some identical twins are absolutely obsessed with doing everything the same, dressing the same, and are incredibly close and emphasize absolutely that. But that's not true for everyone. And I thought, what would happen or what could happen so that identical twins had a breakup of some sort? What would trigger a miss? Well, a separation, an estrangement between two people who are so close together and love each other so much. And that's what I've got for the two brothers in this, that an estrangement occurs because of one brother keeping this secret, that he doesn't want his brother to sacrifice his dream of doing a mentorship on carpentry and what have you, by having to pay back his share of the debts. So the one twin decides he'll just do the lot. But he can't trust himself to be with his brother and not blurt it out. And so he limits contact with his brother. He can't trust himself not to have a night when they've had a beer together and they've got an arm around each other and they're reminiscing and talking about their dad and revealing what actually happened. So was sort of that, and then I built other things around it, and I guess
So you basically took a different angle on this traditional perspective on identical twins. I love that.
yes,
And it worked for you. Did it work
and
for you?
the other thing, if I'm completely honest, is I've had a professional career in education, and there are a lot of people who mock romance writing. And so my heroine is someone who has learned to keep her romance writing secret for a variety of reasons. So I threw in a bit of me.
That makes perfect sense. So, what was the biggest challenge in writing Masquerade? Was it handling these four characters or not necessarily? You got a rein on them and you just flew with it.
I think it was that opening chapter, as I said, and thinking that I had to get that right before I did anything else. And so it was learning that I don't have to get that absolutely right. That was probably the big eye opener.
Which elements from your previous books appear in Masquerade, if any? Do you carry certain elements forward?
I think sometimes you ask people a question about what do you do that no one else can do?
Yes, that is one of
And
my questions. Yes.
yes, and I think that's what I carry through books to some extent. So there are millions of love stories in the world and multiple genres, from sweet to sexy to smutty, paranormal, suspense, fantasy, LGBTIQ. Love is universal yet unique. My particular definition of romantic love involves bucket loads of passion, but it needs to be matched every step of the way with respect and loyalty. I believe that if you're loved by another person in some essential way, you are safe emotionally and mentally, more than physically. And you're free to grow and explore your world. I want my characters to have that safety, to feel that they can then be anything they want. And so I try to give my books heat and heart.
Yes. What was the most gratifying part in writing this book?
Oh, I suspect that, like most authors or like most creatives, it's having positive feedback from your audience. You know, having someone love your book or love your characters, even your minor characters. I've had people tell me that they love a minor character, and it always brings a smile to your face. You can't help yourself. A very close second for me, probably, given my doubts, is the act of publication and discovering that a publisher, who I don't know, a complete stranger who's making a business decision, is prepared to back me and back my creation. And that's life-changing, I think.
Yes, that is life-changing.
Yeah.
And out of the four main characters, which one appears to be the most popular among your readership?
So far, because I've only just Masquerade only released this week. So prior to this, I've had various beta readers and competitions and things like that. And so I've got two brothers and two sisters, are my two sets of twins. And the first book is about one brother and one sister who become a couple. The second book is the second male twin. And the third book is the second female twin. But she appears all the way through. You know, we get snippets of her. And I had a lot of people who really, really liked that woman. They kept saying to me, "What is going to happen to Anna?" And I kept thinking, "Gosh, that's no pressure, no pressure. Just what are you going to do with Anna?" And so yeah, that became hard. But they're all different, and they're all appealing in their different ways. I think, but that's me, the author. I
I bet they are. They sound very appealing. Any
love
surprises, discoveries, or epiphanies while writing Masquerade?
them. The very early stages of this book, I was introduced, I entered a competition which actually was in Canada. And I have one of the judges wrote the most insightful comments on the manuscript. And I asked the competition coordinator if this person would be prepared to continue the conversation with me. And they said yes. So this woman is a particularly outstanding beta reader. She's honest, she's insightful, she's incredibly generous with her time, and she pointed out all sorts of, she honestly said, "No, that doesn't work. What do you think you're doing there? That's inconsistent." Whereas a lot of people don't do that. And that honesty, so it was actually, well, and I had things like I used in one of my books, emetic. Now, I think emetic is a very common word. A mattock is a double-edged gardening tool, sort of a bit axe, a bit spade. But I discovered that is not a common tool in a great many places. So she pointed out some of my Australian expressions that needed also to be explained because I want the Australian flavour to come through.
Sure. I wouldn't have known what you were talking about.
Yes,
I'll
that's
be
what
honest with you.
happened. A few people said that. Holy moly,
Probably
what is
from the
that?
context. All right. What would you have done differently? Because we already touched on what you did absolutely right. No one else could have done it like you, that you can carry through the characters. Now, what would the opposite? What would you have done differently?
I think this is where I, well, if I knew at the beginning of writing that book what I know now, I would have used a completely different method to write it, and a different analysis. So something like Romancing the Beat by Gwen Hayes is a very useful reference book for romance writers, where she examines the way in which romance books are structured differently from other people. So I guess if I'd perhaps had exposure to a few more of those good, insightful people, that's what I wish I'd had. Yeah.
Sure. What have you learned about yourself from writing this book?
Oh, I guess persistence, but persistence, I think, is a general part of my character. I like the, there's a joke about elephants. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
That makes
And
sense.
so I think that's very true. I just think, okay, just do it. Just work your way through it. So there's that. And well, I think that's probably
The main,
yeah.
And that you can also change your writing style. That's pretty amazing. I like that,
Yes.
That you were able to change the style.
I guess I want, even the worst critiques that you get often have something in them. So you might get something back from a competition and you're devastated, and you throw it in the corner. And I usually wait a few weeks and I go back and pick it up because there's something there.
That's
There's
good.
something there.
Yeah, this must be. What are some of the takeaways from Masquerade?
I think the takeaways are very simple. Lies matter, honesty matters, loyalty matters, trust matters if you want a love affair that lasts.
Perfect. Would you do it all over again, your writing career?
Yes, yes. My only regret is, so I'm still writing. My only regret is that because of my childhood, I was encouraged to be financially independent. And so I delayed writing for a very long time, or I dabbled. But my mother was a single mother, and so it was a struggle. And so she was absolutely adamant about education and being able to support yourself at all times.
What is the most interesting or bizarre thing that has ever happened to you during an in-person event or a virtual event? Stuff happens during virtual events too, like Diana's seance. I still don't know who did it.
Well,
Because I
actually,
was
during
ill.
Diana's
Tell us who did it.
during Diana's seance recently, I actually got that the dead person's wife had killed his ex-girlfriend, and I never, never work out who killed who. I read detective stories to the end. I read crime stories. I watch programs. I watch movies. And I never guess. I'm always that person who's surprised at the end.
And so you
And
got
I
it
did get it
right.
right in Diana's seance, or I got part of it right in Diana's seance at the
That's
Whitney.
pretty impressive. I wouldn't have guessed that it was Jules who killed the
She
main person.
went after and she quieted. That's the expression she used. She quieted his ex-girlfriend.
Okay, nice. All right, what's next for Jennifer on your writing journey?
I've got a few things planned. So this book, I've got potentially, well, I've been working on what could be book five, but we're wondering about splitting it into two related series. But I'm working on that. But I've had a manuscript in my bottom drawer since well before COVID that I'm itching to go back to. It's set in Finland with Australian characters. But the spark for it was an old mystery, the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, in 1986. It was considered one of the greatest unsolved mysteries, and weaving a romance around the story really appeals to me. But it was an unsolved mystery. The trouble is, in the middle of COVID, the Swedish government closed the case and named someone they thought was the murderer. But they said he couldn't be prosecuted because he was dead. So there's a lot of controversy and suspicion around this. Is it a solved murder or an unsolved murder? But I've got to rethink some of the things in my book, but that's what I'm looking forward to.
Wow, you get yourself into all sorts of stuff, even politics.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean by you hear something, you know, when you hear
Yes.
that this incredible unsolved mystery in a
Right.
very sort of law-abiding country like Sweden. He was on the way to the theatre. He didn't even have a bodyguard or anything like that. He was on the way to the theatre with his wife and he was assassinated, and they just couldn't work it out.
That is awesome. All right, Jennifer, take it away. You can read to us now.
Okay, what I'm planning to read is an excerpt from chapter two. Liam and Kate, our two protagonists, have met. We have a problem. Kate sat on an ancient wooden bench in the staff room, her phone pressed to her ear. Honey, you have to do something about your overwhelming optimism. It's going to get you into trouble. Her sister's laugh gurgled through the phone. I met Liam Quinn. Saying his name aloud brought her nemesis into clear focus. Anna released a long whistle. What's he look like? Her question startled a laugh out of Kate. You idiot. I'm serious. Every time I press his brother for info, he just says, he looks like me, dresses like something out of Suits, and has a mind like a steel trap. Close enough. Kate welcomed the spurt of temper, recalling how he'd pushed her out of the room during this morning's meeting. A gaunter look, shadows in his eyes. Give me more. I hate Suits. Kate crossed to check the door was shut. She wanted no witnesses to this conversation. They all blend into one amorphous mass of arrogant know-it-alls. Pessimism and prejudice in the same breath. A suit's a uniform in most offices. Anna dated suits. I bet he sleeps in a suit. Why, Maybelline, I'm surely fascinated where you met our hero. Anna gave her best imitation of a Southern belle. On the job, he works for Cleland and Associates. And your research for them is? Anna's innocent query didn't fool her. Commercial in confidence, she snapped, throwing a hand in the air while she began to pace. An ongoing, unless he puts the kibosh on it. What had they talked about when she'd been out of the room? Not the billboard, but she'd bet her name had come up. The mood had been subtly different when she'd been invited back in. The arrogance so-and-so locked me out of part of the meeting. His brother did say he was a heavyweight. He's a narrow-minded, head-in-the-sand mule who wouldn't have the imagination to deal with anything except dry-as-dust intellectual property law. His boss must have rocks in his head to be considering him for this project. Unloading on a sister was liberating. Tell me what you really think, Anna sounded amused. It doesn't matter what I think. The point is, he connected me to the billboard. Kate leaned her forehead against the door. She had no authority over Liam Quinn, whereas his potential power over her future scared her witness. I don't want to have to hide again. Are you sure you weren't just spooked by finding him somewhere you didn't expect him to be? Trust me, no. I'll
Thank
stop there.
you. Nice.
And
Sorry, go ahead.
the first listener who emails me at jenniferrainsauthor@gmail.com with the subject line book podcast giveaway will win a copy of Masquerade signed by me. You'll just have to allow time for mail from Australia to the US.
Sure. Can you give us your email address one more time?
Yes, it's Jennifer Rains, author, all one word, at gmail.com.
All righty. And now parting shots from each one of us. You first, Jennifer, you're my guest. What would you like to leave our listeners with?
Thanks, Emma. If you're looking for a sensual contemporary romance about friends, family, and the things that divide and unite them, consider Masquerade. I promise to deliver on heat and heart.
Sounds like fun and adventure. And my parting shots are write indie, buy indie, and read indie, and read your local newspapers for inspiration. Keep your fingers on the keyboard and your butt in the chair. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.